Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by my Rewire Your Mindset Seminar. It's not really brought to you by my Rewire Your Mindset Seminar. Like, now that I'm thinking of it, I'm like, it's not really brought to you by that. Anyways, this is like an ad. Not even an ad. This is information. Information on my upcoming Rewire Your Mindset Seminar in Dublin on the 11th of January 2020. So my last two Rewire Your Mindset Seminars were both sellouts in Galway and Dublin. And from the amount of tickets that have already been sold for this one, it's looking like this one's going to be similar. So if you already have your ticket, I look forward to meeting you on the day. It's going to be awesome. Absolutely loved the last two seminars. So the Rewire Your Mindset Seminar, for those of you who already have your ticket, I'll see you all on the 11th of January. For those of you who are like, no, I'm not going to Dublin on the 11th of January, you can skip forward the next 90 seconds because this is separate from the podcast. But the Rewire Your Mindset Seminar is in the Hilton Hotel on the Malahide Road in Dublin. Malahide Road, beside Dublin Airport. So the reason for that is, one, the Hilton was awesome last time we hosted the event there, and it's also beside Dublin Airport, because I know some of you flew from the UK, like there was a couple from Australia that flew from Australia for the one in Galway. So if you're coming from the other side of the world, amazing. If you're coming from the other side of Dublin or the other side of Ireland, amazing as well. But Saturday, the 11th of January, 2020, so in the new year, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So the Rewire Your Mindset Seminar, I'll put the link in the description so you can check out the video on there and you can check out the details. But this is very much, if you've been listening to this podcast, the mindset episodes of this podcast, where I speak about having your own biggest enemy between your two ears. This is very much geared around rewiring your mindset, around things like building confidence, the compound effect, setting goals, dealing with negative people, feeling the fear and doing it anyways, habits, mental health, avoiding self-sabotage, and so much more. I've actually built some new exercises that I'm going to be running at this upcoming seminar, because I know a few of you are doubling over. You're already in Galway in Dublin and have got tickets for this upcoming one again. So you'll be happy to hear that there is going to be some different things and different exercises coming for the 11th of January seminar. So if you want to come hang out with me for the Rewire Your Mindset Seminar, if it's something that you think you'll benefit from, I will put the link in the description. As I said, the last two were sellouts, so hopefully, and by the looks of it, it's looking like this one's going to be the same. You can get your tickets from briankeyfitness.com in the seminar section, or just click the link in the description for today's episode. And for those of you who already have your tickets, or for those of you who pick up your tickets, I'll see you on the 11th of January. Now enjoy this week's episode. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Today's episode is kind of an impromptu recording. I actually didn't have any plans to do this episode, but I released a short blog last week on my Facebook page, and I put a little bit of it on my Instagram wall just because of the word count. I couldn't get it all up there, and the feedback was amazing from it. And I had people asking about some of the points that I mentioned. There was only five on that blog post. And people were DMing me and asking me about expanding on some of the topics that I covered. So it kind of gave me the idea for today's podcast. So this one is going to be a press and record episode. I actually have no idea. Similar to any of the solo episodes, like the best life advice I've ever received, dealing with mental health, etc. Or, you know, 8 critical habits for building mental toughness. I have the points in front of me and I'm kind of just going to expand on them as I go along. So for the last few weeks, I've been traveling across Vietnam. I just got back a few days ago, and I kind of reflected on some of the things I've learned while I was out there. And one of the things about travel, for those of you who love travel or have traveled or plan to travel, you always get different perspectives when you take yourself out of your normal environment or your normal comfort zone to a degree, and you start kind of either getting certain beliefs challenged, or you just get a complete perspective change from being outside of your normal situation and daily environment. So I got a few of those while I was in Vietnam, and I didn't really expect to get it, if I'm honest, because as much as I grow and love travel and what I get from it, generally, unless I'm taxing my body on a physical standpoint, like running through the Sahara or running through the Arctic or doing this challenge or that, I generally don't get the growth from just normal travel. Also, most of my travel is normally work-related. So I'm in Dubai next week or the week after next, speaking at a conference. So a lot of my travel tends to be work-related. But this one was a holiday, and it's the first holiday that I've taken since I actually started my own business and moved back to Ireland in 2014. And that's something I'm going to touch on later. because I haven't felt like I've needed a holiday. I've not needed a break from life, which is one of these points that I've really had to think and reflect on, that you shouldn't need a holiday from your life. And I'm going to expand on that in point three in today's episode. But just to give it a little bit of context, I went over to visit Paul Dermody and his girlfriend Orla for the last few weeks. And Paul, who's been on this podcast several times in either the random episodes or most recently in the Q&A where we talked about mindset and nutrition, and he's a frequent guest on this podcast. So I went over to stay with him, and I was using social media while I was there. I wasn't doing my normal Q&As. I was doing my check-ins with my clients in my GA Lean Body program, BKF Online program, etc. But I wasn't as active on social media as I would normally be. So that actually probably helped with some of the points that I've got today, because it makes you think about when you're out of the social media is a funny kind of double-edged sword, that it's brilliant to stay connected with everybody and constantly be in tune with what's going on in the world. But also, if you stay too glued to that, you don't take in the environment when you're in a new country, or at least I don't when I'm in a new country. So there's a few things that I've learned, some about myself and some that I'm just going to share and openly talk out loud on this podcast, similar to the recent episode, you know, the life advice, the best life advice I've ever received. So if you haven't listened to that, I recorded that about 6 weeks ago, and it's been a very popular episode with people because of all the amazing life advice I've received over the years. So maybe check that out as well if you haven't already. But I'm going to break this down into eight different parts, eight different sections on things that I've learned while traveling through Vietnam and now on reflection now that I'm home again. So yeah, I hope you enjoy it. It's going to be a press record and talk kind of episode. So the first point that are the first thing that I've reflected on since I got back, and that's that money doesn't equal happiness. And this is something that I knew before I flew out to Southeast Asia. I was very aware and have been tuned in with this for a while as somebody that would have a default type A personality of striving for more and striving for more. And that can be a very beneficial thing in terms of, from the outside, it looks like you're constantly achieving things and you have this outward success. And to a degree you do, but it's normally fueled by like an inner turmoil of never feeling like you have enough, at least in my case. And this is something I've had to battle with and I've struggled with over the last few years, because my default is to always want more. And that's not a very serving thought process, because that doesn't help, because the reality is you're never going to have everything. You're never going to have all the money in the world. You're never going to have all the girls in the world. You're never going to have all the clients in the world. You're never going to have all the cars in the world or the houses in the world or insert thing here. And that thought process was something I never questioned, and I never kind of critically thought about it. Was it helping me or serving me or not? And over the years, money has been one of those things that I've really had to rewire the way I see it. And I read a great book by Felix Dennis, who is a multi-billionaire. He's dead now. He passed away a few years ago. And he talks about money is a, you know, a serious game or a silly game with serious rules. And I've had to completely change the way I see it, because I've been very fortunate over the last few years with my revenue, with my income streams, with just my life in general. I make a very, very good living doing what I love. And even when I started to make that shift first, as someone that worked for years as a primary school teacher and kind of lived below the breadline, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, and I didn't have a lot of money working as a teacher living in London. And then when I actually got this cash injection from my business taking off, I kept thinking that, okay, money equals success, money equals happiness. And that was the kind of the story that I told myself. You know, I've spoken on this podcast in the past about questioning non-supportive stories. And my story was, the more money I have, the more successful I'll be. And the more successful I am, the happier I'll be. And I never really questioned that story. I spoke about this a little bit in the new book that's out in December, Rewire Your Mindset, the name of the book, about how that was seeded through just experiences that I had and the people that I looked up to. And when you are chasing the wrong thing, it's a very frustrating process. I spoke in my first book about ladder up against the wrong wall, and that you're better to be at the bottom of the ladder up against the right wall than halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And that's kind of how money felt for a long period of time. I thought that I was chasing more money, I was doing more jobs, I was working myself to the bone. And when I would do that, I would have more money. So it was like this positive feedback loop or negative feedback loop in the case that I thought what I was doing was the right thing. But in fact, it was just bridging over an insecurity that I had, thinking that for people to like me and respect me and think that I'm successful, I need to have nice things and I need to have a lot of money to buy those nice things so that people will like me. And I didn't realize that it was an insecurity I had, as opposed to, it's not that you don't have enough money, you do have enough, it's just that you're super insecure. And I had the same thing happen to me when I was competing in bodybuilding. I spoke about this on the bonus episode I uploaded from the Joanne Larrabee podcast, The Other Side of Perfect, that I, when I was competing and traveling the world as a fitness model, I had so much of what I call junk values. I had so much of my self-worth wrapped up in how I looked, that as soon as my body fat climbed to a certain level, or as soon as my muscle mass decreased to a certain level, I would just feel horrible about myself. And from an objective standpoint, I was still walking around relatively lean, relatively big. Like, if you would ask anybody in the street, I was still in really good shape to the general population, but that's not what I saw. When I looked in the mirror, all I saw was that my chest was too small or my legs were too small. I couldn't see that I had, you know, good shoulders or good arms, or that I was relatively lean compared to most people. All these things, I didn't focus on that. The negativity bias of focusing on the wrong thing made me really dysmorphic, or gave me really bad body dysmorphia while I was competing. And it made me question, because it was the second time that it happened. That happened in 2014, 2015 when I was competing. And then when my business started to really take off in 2015, 2016, the same thing happened with money. And it made me realize that, you know, I'm the common denominator here. I'm like, I felt so insecure about my body, so I had to go to the gym twice a day and massively restrict my calories and abuse fat burners. And then when I got to the point that I was so insecure about just myself in general, I'm like, well, I need to work to the bone and earn more money, and people will respect me and people will think I'm successful because I'm doing really well. And, you know, it's like banging your head up against the wall so often and then wondering why you're bleeding in your head. It's like, there's a problem here. I'm like, there's a common denominator, and the common denominator was me. I'm like, it's not a problem with your money, it's not a problem with your body. I was like, you have a problem with your security. You have a problem because you're insecure. You need to deal with that. And it made me realize that happiness, and whatever language you want to put on that, peace, fulfillment, etc., lots of different words for that, you have to figure out what it means for you. And I came up with my four quadrant formula, something I speak about in my Rewire Your Mindset seminar, the health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And that came off the back of realizing that you can do everything in one area of your life. You can have the best body, you can have the most money, you can have the best job, but you tend to, if you put all of your energy and focus into one thing, that's what tends to grow and expand. And that can be beneficial, but it can normally come at the cost of other things. So when I would train and I felt insecure about my body, I would go to the gym several times a day and I would eat very little food. I would avoid meals and drinks with friends because I'm like, well, they don't fit into my calorie plan. And all these unsupportive thoughts, not realizing that the lost connections that I had from friends actually probably would have made me feel better and less stressed and more secure in myself. But I never asked that question. I never delved into that. And the same thing started to happen with money. I was literally turning down meeting with friends because I'm like, I need to do this video. I need to record this podcast. I need to have this meeting. And I would keep doing that. The same thing happened with, you know, I speak about this at seminars. I speak a little bit about it in the new book, and I've touched on it in the podcast in the past, that one of the issues that I had in 2016 was I kind of came to terms with my issues with when I stopped competing. I'd come to terms with, this is the way my body looks, this is my shape, this is how I'm going to look. But I went just down another avenue of focusing too much on money. And what came with that was the cost of not spending enough time with the people closest to me. And when I've spoken on this podcast in the past about finding your inner circle, you know, mine include my mum, my daughter, my sister, Paul, who I visited in Vietnam, and a couple of others. I have a very small circle of people. You know, I've always subscribed to the idea, or have recently at least, that you're better to have four quarters than 100 pennies. You're better to have four incredibly close friends, family members, or people that you like, know, and trust, who you can go to with anything, and they'll support you and you'll support them, than having 100 compadres or 100 people that are drinking buddies, something that I've had in earlier parts of my life. And then when times got tough, I'm like, shit, I actually have no one I can turn to. And that's something I'm going to touch on later, that you should be excited to see your friends. And it's very important that you are surrounding yourself with people who are helping you become a better version of you. And that doesn't happen by default. That happens when you make the decision to do that. I spoke about it in a previous episode with Paul Germany about creating your own inner circle, that you can't let that happen by default, because if it happens by default and your friends and family members just happen by default, it's normally going to be a geographical thing. The people you spend the most time with, the people that you're around at the gym every day, the people that you're at work with every day, your inner circle of people will fall into default mode just because they're around you geographically, that you need to make a conscious choice to be around the right people. And that brings me back to the point of that money doesn't equal happiness. When I was walking around Vietnam, particularly in the slums in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh in the city, in the capital city, there was like 14 people in these tiny little rooms. I wouldn't even call them rooms. They were shacks with smiles from ear to ear. And as I talked to more Vietnamese people, because human behavior is something I'm always really curious about, and I would talk to the Vietnamese because a lot of them had decent English. And they'd tell me that, like, we have a huge connection with our family. You know, until they get married, most people live at home so that they've got this family and community connection for the majority or in a large part of their life. And it just made me think about Johan Hari's book, Lost Connections, which is still one of my favorite books that I've read this year, where he speaks about that connection with other people and how addiction is the opposite to connection, that you can get addicted to things. And I've fallen victim of this, to alcohol, to training, to drugs, to different things, that you can become addicted to those things when you feel like you don't have a connection to other people. And I realized that I had been addicted to money for a long period of time. I had been addicted to success. I had been addicted to filling a void in my own insecurity by climbing this ladder that was up against the wrong wall, and not realizing that money doesn't equal happiness. Yeah, after a certain point, you need a certain point to live. And when all your basic needs are met, all money allows you to do is buy more stuff. It doesn't actually make you any happier. You know, there's a great book by Daniel Gilbert called Stumbling on Happiness, where he talks about the hedonic treadmill, that when you, and he uses money as an example, that when you, the studies show that after you make something like $70,000 a year or $65,000 a year, that life doesn't really change anymore after that point. It's like all your basic needs are met. You have enough money to spend it on whatever you want. You can go on holidays, but you're not like super rich and wealthy, millionaire status. And the hedonic treadmill is where your happiness level adapts based on, say, your income. So this is what I talked about on that podcast with Joanne Larby, that you have to realize when you're chasing a body compositional goal, you want to be leaner, you want to lose body fat, you want to be bigger, whatever your goal is, you're going to get that hedonic adaptation when you hit that goal, that because your bar will move. The problem with me when I was competing in bodybuilding was I never really had an issue with the way that I looked until I started to compete. And then when I started to compete in 2014, my body dysmorphia was at its absolute all-time high by 2015, because I was competing in the Worlds in Las Vegas. I was comparing myself against all these other people who, from all over the world, who were bigger, who were leaner. Your figurative bar moves. That's the hedonic adaptation. It's like, instead of you getting bigger and you getting leaner, thinking you're going to be happier, you end up comparing yourself to somebody else who's already further ahead on that journey. You know, I spoke about that on the podcast on the best life advice I've received, that don't compare your chapter one to somebody else's chapter 20. And that comes all back to a little bit what I'm going to touch on the next point, which is you need to understand that you need to focus on your valuables, and that life is kind of short. I'm going to talk about an example, an extreme example, kind of. But if you don't find what's valuable to you, you're going to fall into this default mode of just kind of going to what everybody else says you should do, or what society says you should do, or some of the default mistakes that I've made. Which brings me on to my next point, that life is short. You need to focus on the valuable things. The next thing I learned in Vietnam came on the back of, we were flying from Saigon, Ho Chi Minh, to Hoi An, which is about an hour north of Saigon. And we were on this like small little airplane. For anyone that's ever been on like an airplane, you get these small rickety airplanes that are like, they may as well be fucking paper planes that you're throwing through the sky, because there's like no support. And we were up on flying on that plane, flying to Hoi An. and there was really bad turbulence. And one of the things that, you know, Paul and Orla were telling me beside, we were sitting beside each other on the plane, and I've flown lots. I've flown all over the world. I've been on a million flights. And I know that if you're sitting on the back of a plane, the turbulence is normally worse than sitting on the front of the plane. So we were at the very back of this plane and the turbulence was literally like rocking. It was like a rocking chair going back and forth, and then got more extreme, more extreme, more extreme. And I generally am not too bad with that. But I remember Paul told me when he landed, he goes, I had made peace with the fact that I was going to die 10 times on that flight. And he goes, it made me think about all the things I'm afraid of. And that made me think a lot on the amount of things that are really valuable and the things that you should be doing. And this was actually going to be my last point on today's podcast, but I wanted to touch on it now because I think it segues quite well. And this is something that I normally end my seminars with. This is something I touch on in the new book, that life is short. And generally, when you realize that you're not getting an infinite amount of days, and you start separating real fears from perceived fears, you tend to make a lot better decisions. And somebody mentioned on my Instagram story earlier this week, on my Instagram thing question Q&A, about, you know, feeling fear. They're like, what's your, you know, how do you get rid of the fear? I was like, how do you do the things that you do? Asking me, you know, how I ran through the Arctic, how I set up my own business, etc. And I gave the answer. I'm like, I can only tell you from my perspective. I'm like, the fear doesn't go away. I'm like, you just get better at handling that. I'm like, it's not that you stop feeling fear and you wake up one morning and there's no longer any fear. It's like, you still feel it. You just get better at dealing with it. You get better tools and you get more confident with how to handle that situation. And you get familiar with that feeling. You know, tell me your relationship with fear and I'll tell you how many things you're going to do in the next 5 years. Like, that fear never goes away. Like, that's a massive misconception. If that's your belief of people who are doing cool things and doing great things or doing things that you want to do, realize that that fear doesn't go away. They still feel it as well. It's just that they've got better at handling it. And that made me realize that the separating perceived fears from real fears, like, there are legit real fears. Like, if you're in a plane and it's about to go down and it's a crash, like, that's a legit fear. Like, the fucking plane might crash, you might fucking go into a mountain, you know, and you could be dead. Like, that's a real fear. I'm like, yeah, totally get that. Somebody calling you out on social media is a perceived fear. Somebody judging you on what you're doing is a perceived fear. Separating perceived fears from real fears can give you tools that you need to go and do whatever it is that you want. Like, I remember, and I've spoken about this countless times in this podcast, so apologies if you're a first-time listener, but one of the lines that I've used, it's the Laird Hamill quote, sometimes attributed to Buddha, is like, don't let your own biggest enemy live between your two ears. And that's what happened to me for so long. Like, when I was trying to start my own business first, because I'd worked for so long as a primary school teacher and it was what I call a quote-unquote safe and secure job. Ironically, it's not a safe and secure job. Like, working for yourself, in my opinion now, is way more safe and secure, because the harder you work and the more tuned in you are to your audience and the more value you can provide people, the better you'll do in your business. And one of the mistakes I made, and it took me so long to get over the fear of making the jump to start my own business when I was working full-time as a primary school teacher, was because I was just embodied in that perceived fear. I literally was worried about what everybody would say. So even the people who did knock me when I made the jump, my family members and friends who call me an idiot, who call me stupid, they were the people that I used on the mornings that I didn't want to get up. Like, nobody wants to get up at fucking 5 a.m. to take a client in the gym for 20 euro an hour. I'm like, nobody fucking wants to do that. I'm like, but I remembered the words from the people who told me I was an idiot and told me I was stupid for doing it. And you can use those words for fuel. I'm like, turn people's laughter into your fuel and fire. Like, that's a really powerful thing. Like, the danger is in the dose. Like, negativity isn't always a bad thing. This is something I've changed my mind about in recent times. Like, negativity isn't always a bad thing. Like, too much negativity, the danger's in the dose, it'll completely cripple you. If you're around negative people, negative family members, negative friends, like, too much of that shit will completely cripple you. But a little bit of it can be beneficial, because it can be the fuel for the fire. Like, when you're trying to get up out of bed in the morning, when you're trying to make the jump in your own business, when you're trying to lose that weight, when you're trying to get that body you're desiring, it's like, yeah, you should use the fucking fuel. You should use the laughter. You should use the people who told you you couldn't do it, because that's really fucking powerful. You know, I like to think of negativity. It's like fire. You know, fire can burn down your entire house if it fucking takes over the house, but it can also light it up if you have it in the right quantity and dose. So understand Everything is how you choose to see it. You know, everything. Like, it's all opinions and perspectives at this moment in time. Like, people aiming negative words in your direction, people calling you names, people telling you you can't do something. That's all opinions that that person has at that moment in time. Everybody has ever felt it. Everyone who's ever done anything has felt it and heard it from other people. I still fucking hear it. I still hear people telling me I can't do things. I still hear people telling me you can't run through the Arctic. You're going to die doing that. I'm like, cool. I hope not. I hope you're wrong. And you realize that it never goes away. Again, similar to fear. You just get better at handling it. Like, if you think you're going to get to a certain level and people aren't going to throw negative shit in your direction, you're sadly mistaken. Because it's still going to come in your direction. The only difference is you get better. You get stronger. You get significantly more adept at handling it. That's the difference. That's the only difference. And fear is the exact same. So when it comes to life being short, realize that there are certain things that you're going to do. There's certain things that you want to do that you need to fucking do, or else you're going to regret it. You know, I've spoken about this 97-year-old rule on the podcast. Like, I make my decisions based on my 97-year-old rule. I ask myself, if I'm on my deathbed at 97 years of age and I look back on this decision I'm about to make, would I regret it? You know, that's how I signed up for the Sahara. When I signed up to 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara, I never ran a marathon, and I remember thinking when I pressed that pay now button, I was like, I would regret not doing this out of fear. I'm like, fuck it, if I go out there and something happens and I can't do it, at least I tried. You know, you're better to at least have been in the war and been in the battle and tried and failed than to not do it out of fear. And making every decision like that, what would you regret more? You know, that guy you want to talk to in the bar, that girl you want to go up to in the coffee shop, like, what would you regret more? I'm like, they're perceived fears. Like, identify the worst case scenario and what could happen from this thing that you're doing, the job you're going for, the person you want to talk to, the body you want to get. What's the worst case scenario if it doesn't go your way? What's the upside? What's the downside? And can you handle the downside? In most cases, when it's perceived fear, you can handle the downside. Sometimes the worst case scenario is you will physically die. You know, a plane will crash and you'll die. Then yeah, maybe don't do that. Like, maybe don't fucking rattle the plane. But in most cases, that's not what happens. So identify that. Realize that life is short. And when you focus on the valuable things, when you focus on the things that are important from you, and you separate real fear from perceived fear, and you stop getting out of your own head, or you start getting out of your own head, and don't let your own biggest enemy live between your two ears, you'll start going for those things that you want, whatever that is. Like, one of the things that used to fucking terrify me as a kid, I used to be freaked out going through graveyards as a kid. Like, that used to scare the fucking shit out of me because of all the dead bodies. Like, I would walk through a graveyard and think, oh my God, there's like dead bodies or zombies. They're going to come out and fucking eat me. But now as an adult, it scares me even more because I'm looking at graves and I go to a graveyard and I look at the tombstones and I look at the headstones and I'm like, man, there's people here that had all their fucking dreams and they died inside of them. I was like, there's people here that are things they wanted to do and things they wanted to achieve, and they didn't get a fucking chance to do it. Either because life took them away and they took them too soon, or because they had a fear and they went to their deathbed at 90 years old or 80 years old or whatever age they died at with all their regrets inside of them because they were afraid to make decisions because of people's opinions. They were afraid to live life on their own terms because of what people would say or what people would think. I'm telling you now, life is short. Realize that you're not getting an unlimited amount of days in this, and you need to focus on the valuable things. And if you're disguising fear as practicality, you're telling yourself you can't do this thing, you can't go for that job, you can't start this business, you can't get in this shape, you can't approach that person, that's all a story. You need to question those stories and make sure that the story you're telling yourself is one that's supporting you in whatever it is that you do want to achieve. The next one is a slightly different take, and that's you shouldn't need a holiday from life. And this comes back to what I said earlier in the episode, that there was a time when I was working full-time as a primary school teacher, and I'll never forget this line, that when I was on teaching practice, for those of you unfamiliar with how teachers kind of become full-time teachers, you go through teaching college, you go on work placement, and you get like real teachers who've been working for years, and they kind of mentor you during a 6, 12, 18 week period, and they kind of just iron out any of your mistakes that you would have as a teacher, and they kind of equip you before you go into like your NQT, your newly qualified teacher year. And I'll never forget on my teaching practice, the lady, whose name's completely escaped my mind now, But I remember she told me that teaching is a little bit like being in prison, because you get so many holidays every 6 weeks or every 8 weeks, either Easter break, summer break, Christmas break, etc. She was like, it's a little bit like being in prison. She goes, you're always counting down to the next holiday. And that line, I never forgot it. I remember exactly where I was when she told me, sitting in a staff room. I was eating like fucking a box of roses or some shit. I was like, because like that's one of the like upsides and downsides of being a teacher. I'm like, same for people that work as nurses. Like, there's always biscuits and chocolates around. I'm like, that's great. I'm like, oh, cheat day, it's fine. But I'll never forget those lines. And when I was working as a teacher, I went on to work as a teacher for 4 years. And that never left me, because that happened every single time a holiday would come round. I would work for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever the teaching term was, and I was counting down on my calendar, literally marking out X's until the next holiday. And I got to a point when I realized that, why the fuck I need a holiday from my job. And it got to the point when I was hating what I was doing as a teacher, and I hated my first teaching job, that I'm like, I actually needed a holiday from life. So not only when I took a holiday did I go away abroad and go do cool things. To be honest, I didn't have a lot of money, so I couldn't do that. But I would just literally numb out. And I would go to the gym in the mornings, and then I would watch 7 or 8 or 9 hours of a TV show, or I would catch up on some series that I was watching. And I would kind of just take myself out of the world, because I just needed this. What I felt at the time was just some escapism to make me not think about my life too much. And that came down from my own fulfillment in what I was doing. And that's not to say that teaching is a bad job. It just wasn't the job I was put on the planet to do. Ironically, it's what I do in some capacity now is teaching. And I put a lot of my speaking, my ability to speak, either on a podcast or at seminars or at conferences, down to years of teaching and trying to communicate ideas and break them down and break down complicated ideas into their more easily digestible form. So I actually learned a lot of that through my years of teaching. And so it has been a very, very supportive path. Like, I'm a big believer that your mess becomes your message, and everything you've done is setting you up for something greater if you can get out of your own head and, you know, don't let your own biggest enemy live between your two ears. But one of the things when I started my own business, even at the beginning when it was an absolute grind, when I moved back to Ireland first in 2014, I had no social media, I had no podcast, there was no book, I had no clients, like nobody knew who I was. But I had worked as a I had worked as a personal trainer for 2 years in the evenings while working as a primary school teacher during the day while I lived in London. So I did come back and I realized I was a good personal trainer, because I had ironed out a lot of my kinks and I had kind of got good at my craft. But when I came back, nobody knew who I was. But even at that beginning, when you're grinding and getting up at 5 a.m. and you're taking people for 20 euro an hour and you're putting in the hours, I never felt like I needed a holiday. And that only compounded over the years, you know, to the point that I went away to Vietnam to visit Paul and Orla. And I kind of worked as I was out there. I was checking DMs. I was checking in with programs. And that comes down to the contrast of not feeling like you need a holiday, that you need to either escape from your job or, worse, escape from your life. And that made me really check in with that, because there was a time and a place, and I speak about this in the new book, and I've spoken about it, I think on a guest podcast, I can't remember which one, maybe the School of Calisthenics podcast, the bonus episode I put up last week, that there was a time when I was working as a teacher, but I used to get Friday ecstasy and Sunday blues is what I used to call them. So every Friday, I would be ecstatic that it was the weekend. I'm like, cool, I get to sleep in for the next couple of days. I get to do what I want. And then I would get Sunday blues. So every Sunday, I'd be like, oh, I got to go to work tomorrow. And even by the end of my teaching career, I didn't hate what I was doing, but I still used to get those Sunday blues. And I remember thinking to myself, I would give my left arm to not feel this way. I'm like, I'm feeling this way every single week that I'm working. And it was just heightened when I would have a holiday. Like the Friday before a holiday, I would be like fucking manic depressive, in the sense of I would just be bouncing off the walls. And then when I'd have to go back, I'd be like on the bottom side of that or on the lower side of that, where I'm like, oh fuck, I've got another 6 weeks of this. And it made me realize I was just kind of cruising through life. I was just kind of letting life happen to me. And one of the reasons that I'm so big on doing things that you love, regardless of what that is, and some of you listening to this are teachers, nurses, some of you are doing jobs in factories, and you love what you do. You either love the job you're doing, or it pays you and facilitates you to do the other things outside of work that you do love, and you love the routine and the structure, and that's fine. I'm not speaking to those people who love what they're doing. I'm speaking to those of you listening who don't love what you're doing. I'm like, similar to what I said earlier about life being too short, life is too fucking short to do a job you hate. I'm like, one of the questions that I generally get people to ask themselves, I'm like, if this is the only thing that you get for the rest of your life, would you be happy doing it? And that's a powerful question. Like, if this was the only relationship you get for the rest of your life, would you be happy in that relationship? If this was the only job you get for the rest of your life, would you be happy with that job? If this was the only training program or eating strategy you get for the rest of your life, would you be happy doing that? I'm like, because process is everything. Like, if you can't be happy on the journey, how do you expect to be happy at a destination? You have to focus on the process and focus on the day-to-day. And when I was constantly working to the next weekend and working to the next holiday and constantly looking forward, I felt like I was fast forwarding my life. And it goes the opposite, and the contrast of being in a fortunate position, and I'm very grateful to have the contrast from that position, that I was dying to get back to routine after Vietnam. And I loved it. I got to catch up with Paul and Orla. I got to travel around a beautiful country. I got to meet amazing people. But I was ready to come home. I'm like, I can't wait to get back recording podcasts, to get back doing my Instagram Q&As, to get back writing, to get back speaking. All these things, a complete contrast to every other holiday I'd ever been on when I was working as a teacher. And it just reaffirmed that thought process that you shouldn't need a holiday from life. You shouldn't always need a holiday from your job. Yeah, it's beneficial to decompress sometimes, and it's cool to travel and go away. But if you're dreading going to work on a Monday morning and you cannot wait for the weekend and you cannot wait for the next holiday because you just want to be out of that place you're in, I come back to that ladder up against the right wall. Like, if you hate what you're doing, life's too short to be doing that. There's other things out there. And when I spoke about money doesn't equal happiness, you also have to ask yourself the question. And one of the thought experiments that I did when I was working as a teacher, this would never have actually came true, but it was a thought experiment that I did. I asked, would I be happier making £80,000 a year as a teacher or £20,000 a year as a personal trainer working in fitness? And it was the first time ever I'd questioned that. And I'm like, I would rather be doing £20,000 a year as a personal trainer. Ironically, you can earn significantly more than that if you're a good personal trainer, and you'd never earn that as a teacher. But the thought experiment was the first time I'd questioned the belief that money equals happiness. And if you hate what you're doing, you can scale back other parts of your life to do something you love. You know, I had to grin and bear in 2014 when I moved back in at my mom and dad, and I was driving my sister's shitty little Toyota Yaris, a 2000 Toyota Yaris. And I'm like, one of those cars that you had to cross both of your fingers every morning that it would start. And that's what I had to do in 2014. It was the best decision I ever made because it was getting my ladder up against the bottom of the ladder against the right wall. And even though people laughed and I was embarrassed telling friends and family members, I'm like, yeah, I'm back living at home. But within 6 months, I had built up my waiting list and my business had completely exploded, and in a positive sense. And I was able to do that because I loved what I was doing. It was the falling in love with the process. It was falling in love with the journey, which is the same right now. And when you can come back and tell yourself and ask yourself, if this is the only job you get for the rest of your life, if this is the only relationship you get for the rest of your life, would you be happy in it? Because when that answer comes back and you're like, fuck yeah, hell yeah, I love what I'm doing. I love who I'm with. I love my inner circle. I love this side or the other. Then you keep doing that because that's process. And then life feels way longer. It feels more fulfilling than constantly counting down to the weekend and constantly counting down to the next holiday, which is something that I did for years. Like, it feels like those 4 years of teaching just feel like a blur because I was always counting down to the weekend. I was always counting down to the holiday. Whereas the last 7 years have just been incredible because of the amount of amazing people that I've met, the amount of incredible things that I've got to do. And I'm very grateful for that. But everything comes from a contrast. You know, I've always subscribed to the Carl Jungian philosophy that your roots can't go down, you know, branches can't reach to heaven if your roots don't go down to hell. The reason that suffering and going through bad times is such a beneficial thing is because it gives you that contrast point for when things are good. Every shitty relationship, every person that's cheated on you, every person that's fucked you around, every crap job and every boss that's fucking yelled at you, like every time you've hated what you're doing is a contrast for when you do like what you're doing. You know, the boys on the School of Calisthenics podcast on that bonus episode I uploaded last week asked about that. They were like, you seem like a really positive guy. Was that always the case? And I gave them the answer. I'm like, no, because that's not true. I'm like, it's something I've developed over time through having a contrast of not being at a place when I was happy where I was. You know, I've spoken about my own issues with environmental depression, my own issues of self-imposed anxiety that would cripple me. I'm like, the reason my mindset is strong now is because I've chosen my suffering. Like, I'm very aware that that by default, my mindset isn't strong. So I have to stay on top of building it every fucking day. And when you do that and you own that and you can take control of that, then you can change it. There's nothing wrong with your starting position. There's nothing wrong with not being happy with where you are. There's nothing wrong with hating your job or hating the relationship you're in or hating something in your life right now. But there is something wrong if you don't make a change. It's like, if you don't like where you are, you can move. You're not a fucking tree. So the next one is quite a short one. And it's just a line that Paul Dermody told me about 18 months ago. And that is that you should be excited to see your friends. And this isn't something that I thought about too much at the time. But since then, it like planted a seed that kind of grew into a full-grown oak tree. Because there was a time in my life when I wasn't that excited to see my friends. Not all of them. And I had to kind of check in with that. Because now when I was going to Vietnam, and I'm very fortunate, I've got a small circle of friends and family members who, you know, I would throw my life on the line for and them for me. But that wasn't always the case. And the first way I identified who I should be spending more time with and who I should be focusing more energy and attention on, I had to realize it was the friends that I was excited to see. And in contrast to that, or contrary to that, the friends that I was meeting, why wasn't I excited to see them? Or even worse, why was I dreading to see them? And I remember when I lived in London in my mid-20s, I had some great friends that I've since kept in contact from those days in London, but I also had some friends who I wasn't very connected with and friends who I used to dread meeting for coffee or meeting for a drink. And it made me check in with the fact that I'm like, why was I dreading meeting these people and I was excited to meet other people? And it's since something that I've kind of expanded on in previous podcasts about like emotional vampires, like people that are really negative or people who absolutely hate what's going on in their life and then they project all their shit onto you. And it's very, very difficult not to take that in, especially if you're not feeling very secure in where you're at. You know, my mom used to always tell me that if you lie down with dogs, you'll get fleas. And I think about that with negative people and emotional vampires who suck all the energy from you. Like if people are constantly giving out about everything in their life and they're constantly giving out about their boss or their job or their partner or their wife or their husband, it's very difficult not to take that in and be affected by that. And a very simple question to ask yourself: you have friends, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. You know, if you're around four or five negative people, it's very likely you're going to become the sixth. What friends are you excited to see? And on the flip side of that, what friends do you dread hanging out with? We all have normally that one friend. And for me, how it happened and how I had these colleagues and friends, it was down to what I mentioned earlier about that geographical convenience. They were people that I either worked with or lived with or saw every day, and as a result they became my friends and they became my inner circle by complete default. Who's in your life right now? What friend or colleague or family member or work colleague or whoever it is, who's in your life right now that is a friend and is coming into your inner circle by complete default? Your life would actually be better if you didn't spend as much time with them. Ask that question and then flip it on the other side on the friends you're excited to see. Why are you excited to see those people? Are they people that are making you become a better version of you? Do they make you laugh? Do they challenge you? Do they make you a better version of yourself and you them? Spend more time with those people. As I said earlier, you're better to have four quarters than 100 pennies. You're better to have four incredible friends who you focus your time, energy, and attention on, nurture those relationships, than having 100 people who are drinking buddies, which is something that I had quite a lot of in London during my earlier part of my life. Remember, you should be excited to see your friends. Identify any emotional vampires. Identify those people who pull you down. Identify those negative people who are actually making you worse when you're in their company, and spend less time with them. Okay, the next point is something that I'm actually going to talk with Paul Dermody the next time we record a podcast. And this actually came from his girlfriend, Orla, who is someone that I has became very close friends with over the last couple of years. And this line is something that really stood out with me. And that's, what will this pizza slice satisfy that the last one didn't? And it's funny because we all have a version of a pizza slice, a one-night stand, a drink, a drug, a whatever it is that you're addicted to, or whatever thing it is, that food, that ice cream. What will this pizza slice satisfy that the last one didn't? And it made me think, because we all have a version of that. We all have something that we do mindlessly. either the food that we eat, the habits that we're kind of falling into, or the routines that we follow every day, there's something happening that we're doing that isn't making us a better version of ourselves. Like somebody asked me midweek on an Instagram Q&A, like, how do you set your goals? How do you stay motivated? And like, if you've listened to this podcast, you know where I'm going with this. Like, motivation is fucking horseshit. Like, motivation just gets you going. It doesn't help you get to any end goal. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. Motivation isn't what gets you to an end goal. Doing the right things every day and setting up the right daily habits is what helps you get to an end goal. You want to be leaner, you want to be skinnier, you want to be bigger, you want to be better, you want to be smarter, you want to be this, that, or the other. That's the end goal. What are you doing every day that's helping you get to that end goal? If you need to map your actions to whatever your end ambition is, and if you do that, it's inevitable that you'll hit the end goal. If you picture a ladder, like the, as I spoke about earlier, a ladder up against the right wall, you're just climbing that ladder, and every step gets you one step closer to that end goal. You're focusing on process, you're focusing on journey. But we all have versions of this that we're doing and bad habits that we're following that aren't helping us. And the pizza slice really landed with me because I've done that with food in the past. And I don't eat pizza, but I have a massive sugar craving. I have a massive sweet tooth, ice cream and chocolate. And there's times, I remember when I used to compete, where I could literally go to 3 or 4 tubs of Ben & Jerry's, like those big fucking tubs, which was like 4,000 or 5,000 calories. And I would justify it. I'd be like, oh, it's cheat day, it's fine. And not realizing that that's just not as one after a fucking tub of Ben & Jerry's. For anyone that's eaten a tub of Ben & Jerry's, I'm like, you're not getting much satisfaction in the second tub, because like, you're just like, oh, there's so much dairy, so much sugar, it's like, but I can't stop eating. And if I had thought of this line during that period of my life, it would have stopped me, because there was like this diminishing return on every tub of ice cream that I ate. Like, I literally remember one day after a bodybuilding show, after the Worlds in 2015 in Vegas, when I flew home, I remember eating 4 tubs of Ben & Jerry's, the caramel choo-choo and the peanut butter cup. I had 2 tubs of each, and they're the big fucking tubs. And the first one tasted amazing. Don't get me wrong, Ben & Jerry's amazing. Ice cream is awesome. I'm like, I regret nothing on this first tub. And then I ate the second one. I'm like, oh, I feel a bit sick now. And then I ate a fucking third and a fourth one. And I actually felt disgusting by the end of it. I was like, I felt so sick. I was like, this is way too much food, way too much sugar, way too much dairy. There's no justification for this. And the fourth tub had nearly zero satisfaction, but I still ate it. And there's versions that we do. We all have habits and we all have things that we do that everyone we do after that isn't satisfying, and the danger is in the dose. Like, if your end goal, and the example that I love and love the pizza slice, if your end goal is to lose weight or get into better body shape and change your body composition, sometimes having a pizza slice is a good thing. You know, you should factor that in. Some people do a flexible dieting approach and that works really well for them. Some people have a weekly free meal or a cheat meal, and that's what helps them stay on track psychologically or even physiologically with the program to kind of reset their metabolism so that they doesn't stall from eating too low a calorie or too low a carbohydrate for a long period of time. That can all be really beneficial, but you probably don't need the 10 slices of pizza. And if you did, was the 10th slice as beneficial as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 before it? Because that's something I never checked in on. And as someone with addictive tendencies, as a behavioral, and has behavioral patterns where I can become very addicted to things very quickly, there's a reason that I stay away from like hardcore drugs and things on that of that nature, because by my default, I can get very addicted to things very quickly. That can be very beneficial. You know, I've spoken, you know, on Instagram stories about turning your weakness into your superpower. That can be very beneficial. It can help me hit an end goal quite quickly. I can go from never having ran in my life to running 6 back-to-back marathons in a few months because I can get very addicted with hitting an end goal. So it can be serving, but for the majority of the time it's not. And checking in with this question, whatever that thing, that workout, when I think of workout addiction, training several times a day, it's like, what will this workout satisfy that the last one didn't? I'm like, why do you have to train twice today? And you realize, from my case, it was filling in either a gap in insecurity or a connection that I was missing elsewhere. And a lot of that changed for me when my daughter was born. When Holly was born, she's going to be 5 in May. A lot of that changed because I now had this connection that I didn't felt like I was missing before, but it definitely made me aware of how I was showing up elsewhere, because that connection, and you don't have to have kids to get this. Some people get this with parents. Some people get this with their family members. Some people get this with their romantic partners, their girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, and wife. But that lack of connection, and are you filling in a void with this food, with this workout, with this thing, trying to satisfy a need and a desire that's actually coming from a lack somewhere else in your life? And that's why the health, wealth, love, and fulfillment, the four quadrants that I talked about earlier, I have to check in with those really regularly. You know, my health, my physical health, my mental health, my wealth, my bank account, my love, my family members, my relationships, my personal relationships, etc., and my fulfillment levels, my job. I check in with those and score them 1 out of 10, you know, every couple of months now. I did it every few weeks when I came up with it first, and now I do it every quarter, every couple of months, just to make sure that I'm staying on top and not getting obsessed in one area and negating one part of my life to try and completely overcompensate in another area, thinking that if I just get bigger and I get leaner, then all the other problems will go away. You know, I love the Naval Ravikant quote for money. Bringing it back to my first point, he's like, money doesn't solve all your problems. Money just solves all your money problems. And I think about that with your body as well. I'm like, being in great shape doesn't solve all your problems. It just solves your body shape problems. You know, there's other areas of your life that you need to focus on. And whatever way you break that up, you know, remember what you focus on is what expands. If you focus on one area of your life, then it's going to come at the cost of other areas. And realize that if you're overcompensating by the food, eating too much pizza, eating too much ice cream, doing things that you know you shouldn't be doing because they're not helping you hit the end goal. Successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not, and conditioning that and building that over time. Like, that's the secret for success in whatever you're doing. But ask yourself, what will this pizza slice or what will this insert thing that you're doing here satisfy that the last one didn't? That's something I'm going to be checking in a lot with going forward. And I think if you're similar to me and you have that addictive tendencies where you can fall into bad habits quite quickly if you don't stay on top of them, it's probably worth checking in with that as well. So the next one is very much Vietnamese based, and that's that values are cultural, so you better find your own. And this is something that I noticed because when I lived in California, and I lived for a time period in Northern California, just north of San Francisco, or just south of San Francisco in the Berkeley Bay area. And when I lived over there, and I've since had some great friends that I've stayed in touch with, I noticed a lot of the cultural values in the West, Ireland and the US particularly, there was a huge focus on success, on work ethic, earning money, etc. You know, you're successful, and maybe I have some false consensus bias here that I would see other people and it would just confirm my bias, so apologies if this isn't your belief. But what I thought for such a long period of time was success, one, I confused success and happiness. I thought being successful meant earning a lot of money, which equaled happiness. And that meant the nice car, the new clothes, the big house, the attractive girlfriend, everybody respecting you and thinking you're doing really well. And that's what success meant for me. And one of the most important things you can do in your life, just as a side note, is like define what success means for you. Otherwise, you're going to fall into a default metric of success, what everybody else tells you that you should do or think. And when I was in Vietnam, I realized that they have something similar, but it's coming from a different area. And we were doing a tour in Hoi An, which is a beautiful beachside kind of part of Vietnam on the east coast of Vietnam. And we went on a tour, like a food tour around Vietnam. So if you're following my Instagram stories, I popped up some of those photos. Like, Jesus Christ, I don't know what some of those fucking foods were. I didn't eat all of it. Needless to say, I'm like, I don't know what that is. I'm not eating that. But we went on this food tour, and there was two things that jumped out at me. One was the end of the tour finished with meeting a 104-year-old man and his 96-year-old wife. They were a combined age of 200, and both laughing and smiling, taking photos. Like, there was one stage where the wife, who's 96, was sitting down on this elevated couch watching a TV show, some Vietnamese soap, and she just popped up, closed the window, sat back down, and turned to the tour guide and was like, I was cold. I'm like, she's fucking 96, popping up on a bed to close a window. I'm like, that's how I want to be when I'm in my 90s. But also, the 104-year-old man only retired 6 years earlier. And one of the things that I noticed on that Vietnamese tour, the tour guide, although bringing us around doing different foods and different locations, he was bringing us into different businesses. And there was one other man who was fetching water for all the local stores from a well, and he'd been working for 14 hours that day. So 14 hours, he worked 6 days a week, takes Sundays off, and we had gone to another plantation where they made rice noodles that was open 7 days a week, 364 days a year, closed for Christmas or New Year's, I can't remember which day it was now, and they worked round the clock. And it made me realize that their values, from what I was exposed to and what I experienced, was they valued work ethic and working round the clock. And the harder you work, the more hours you put in, the more respect you'll garner from everyone in the community. And it made me think about when I used to live in California, where the dollar was kind of the value metric. It's like the more money you made, the more valuable you were. And that, again, this is just my experience from what I gathered from it, whether it's false consensus bias on my experience making me perceive it in a certain way, I don't know, but that's what I got from both cultures, East and West. And from reading a lot of history, and I'm a massive history geek, it was one of my favorite topics to teach when I was a teacher, but I read a lot of history books, and you realize that there's so many different things and values, or different values that are cultural based and are purely societal based, that you need to question that and critically analyze. Is what you're valuing right now because this is what you truly value, or because this is what people told you you should? And one of the things that jumps to mind here, I always think of the educational system. As someone that worked for 4 years as a teacher, who's came through, I've got 2 degrees, I came through the university system, I did very well in that system, I did poor in secondary school, then I was allowed to type with the Scraffy in university and I did very well. I went on to become a teacher and worked in that system. And that system for me is really broken. It was one of the reasons I had to leave teaching, because I'm like, this, we're teaching people and teaching kids things that aren't going to be relevant for them in 10 years' time. I'm like, this is broken. But culturally, we put such a massive emphasis on to do well, you go to school, you get a good education, you get a job, you work till you're 65 and then you retire, and you know, and you give back, or you go travel or do whatever you want to do. And when I first questioned that and realized that this is a cultural belief, either through this is what I've been told in Ireland and the UK that we should do, or this is what I've been told by family members, or this is what I've experienced from other people who I perceive to be successful, it made me realize that you need to define your own values. You need to define what success means for you. You need to define what's valuable to you, because if you don't do that, you're going to fall into the default mode on what people tell you you should value, or what culture or society tells you you should value. And that's fine if it's in alignment. You know, I went so long through my life, and I spoke about it to kind of tie it all together when I spoke about chasing money earlier, that my version of success and my insecurity after I came out of getting to the kind of a body composition where I was happy enough with where my body was, I went to fill in the insecurity and wanted people to think I was successful and doing well by buying the new car and getting the new house and having the fancy clothes and all these things. And I'm like, well, these will make me successful and people will respect me if I do this. That was falling into a cultural thing, because that's what I had been led to believe. The people I looked up to and the people I thought were successful had these things. So I followed that path, not realizing that it was ladder up against the wrong wall. When I got those things and started to make amazing money and get all these fucking nice things, I was at the top of that ladder. I'm like, I'm against the wrong fucking wall. I was like, I feel the same. I was like, I actually don't feel any different. I was like, and worse, some of my connections with family members and friends is worse, because I've had to literally put the time, energy, and effort into building my business and making more money at the expense of spending time with loved ones. And, you know, I had that realization when Holly was very small, you know, before her first birthday, that I'm like, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to have a terrible relationship with her. I'm like, I can't be working 15-hour days. I can't be working 14-hour days and then have the energy to do the things I want to do with her and show up and be present with her. You know, this is something that I tell at my seminar. I remember when we were, just before I went to Vietnam, this was a couple of months ago, before I flew out to, where was I last? The last time was before I flew out to the Arctic. This was several months ago. And I remember I had Holly in the back of my car. She's in her child seat, obviously. Freddie Gard's listening. She was in her child seat in the back of the car. And she was watching this vlog. She watches these Adley vlogs on YouTube. It's her favorite vlog channel. And she was watching this Adley vlog. And something I let her watch for a few hours a day, particularly if we're driving or stuck in traffic. And on the vlog, the kid was asking, what does your daddy do? What does your mommy do? And it paused. And I asked Holly, I was like, well, Holly, what does your mommy and daddy do? And she thought about it. And she goes, oh, my mommy, what's her job? She goes, my mommy goes to the gym. I was like, I must tell her mom. I was like, her mom's going to fucking love that. Because her mom does go to the gym every day. And I was like, what does your daddy do? And she thought about it. And she goes, my daddy plays with me. And I remember this feeling of just like nearly tears in my eyes. I'm like, I haven't done too badly. I was like, if I'm at 4 years of age or my daughter's at 4 years of age and she thinks my job is playing with her, I was like, I haven't done too badly. And it kind of just reaffirmed that thought process of keep doing what you're doing. You're on the right path here. And sometimes you need those messages and you need those something that confirms what you're doing is right. And that was the one that worked for me. And a lot of that came down to the fact that I was living a life that was completely opposite to that several years ago. And I had to check in on what was valuable to me. What would I regret at my 97-year-old self? I'm like, would I regret having all this money in my bank account and having a terrible relationship with the people closest to me, you know, or my daughter doesn't even like me? I've spoken about this on previous podcasts. When people ask, how do I deal with hate online or deal with negativity online? I'm like, because it's not important. I'm like, people don't have to like me, you know, and same as you listening, people don't have to like you. Not everybody has to like you, but the people closest to you should. I'm like, none of it matters. I could have 10 million people following me online. They all love me for whatever reason. I'm like, but if my family or my daughter hates me, I'm like, what's the fucking point? I'm like, what good is that to anybody? I'm like, that doesn't help me. I'm like, if my mom hates me and thinks I'm a shit son and my daughter won't speak to me because she thinks I'm an asshole, I'm like, that's what's important. I'm like, they're the things that are important. What are your friends and inner circle saying behind your back? I'm like, that's how you can tell a lot. Like, I always think about it with my relationship, say, with my sister, or Paul Germany, people in my inner circle, I'm like, they would love to hear what I'm saying behind their back when they're not around. I'm like, if they were able to eavesdrop drop on that conversation, I'm like, they would love to hear what I'm saying about them because it's all positive stuff and great stuff. And I'm like, that's how I want to be. I want my inner circle talking to me behind my back as if it's something that if I listened in on, I'd be like, yeah, I'm really happy that that's how they're talking about me. As opposed to the, you know, conversations that you hear when someone's best friend walks out of the room and they start shitting on them or giving out about them. I'm like, that's a toxic person to be around. And you're probably better not to be around that. But to tie it all back, realize that values are a cultural thing. You have to find what's valuable to you. Because if you don't find your own, you're going to fall into a default. You know, when I was in Vietnam, I noticed it was a work ethic thing. The more hours you worked, the more respect people felt for themselves and for other people in their community. When I lived in California, when I lived in the US, it was the more money you made and people respect you. And if that's you and you fall into either of those brackets, great. If that's your true self and that's your truth for you, then by all means, keep doing that. But if it's not, identify what those things are valuable to you and start working towards those as opposed to just letting it be culturally decided because you live in a certain country or you live in a certain part of the world and this is what success means to everybody else because it may not be what success means to you. And then the last one, which is when you have your health, you have many goals, and when you're ill, you only have one. And this came off the back of the very end of my trip that I came back from Vietnam. And one of the downsides of traveling Southeast Asia is a lot of pollution. Like Saigon is, in terms of Ho Chi Minh, the actual city's got 12 million people. It's just full of pollution. The air is disgusting. Like it's rat infested on the ground. And it's funny because as polluted as the city is in parts of the city, it's equally as beautiful in the countryside. So there's a huge contrast. But I got sick when I came back. And I went to a doctor because I was curled over for 2 days. And she was like, okay, were you swimming? I was like, yes, I was swimming at the beach. She was like, okay. She goes, were you eating the food? I was like, no, I didn't eat that much of the Vietnamese street food. She goes, were you drinking the water? I said, no. She goes, were you brushing your teeth? I said, yes. And I was like, oh, fuck. She goes, okay, so you probably have some bug or something in your stomach from consuming some of the Vietnamese food or consuming some of the Vietnamese water. And there's a line and there's a great quote that when you walk into the Galway Clinic Hospital in Galway City, and it's that health is the crown, the well wear that only the sick can see. And it made me realize, and this happens to me every single time I get sick, and I've been very fortunate. I have a very good diet, a good training program, a good recovery strategy. I very rarely get sick now. And every time I do, it reminds me that when you have your health, you've got many goals. You know, I've got goals in my business. I've got goals in my personal life. I've got goals in, you know, relationships, my family members, my friends, my body composition, the targets I want to hit. I've got countless goals. But when you're ill and when you're sick, you only have one goal, and that's to get better. And that's something I have to check in with regularly. And I actually wrote this down and put it up in my wardrobe just to remind me, because we can get so consumed, myself, particularly myself, and I'm speaking to myself here, you can get so consumed with achievement and so consumed with striving and getting after the next thing and getting after it. And by all means, I'm the first person to tell people, I'm like, go get after it. Go fucking do the things you want to do. I'm like, you should wake up ready to fucking go after the thing that you want. You should feel that desire and ambition. Like, that's going to be beneficial. It's going to drive you. It's going to get you going and get you to a better life. But don't let it come at the cost of realizing that you have amazing things that you can be grateful for right now. And, you know, I spoke about gratitude anchors on a podcast. I think it was the 8 Disciplines for Building Mental Toughness, 198, my most downloaded episode of last year. And I spoke about my gratitude anchors, you know, that as long as I have these things in my life, I'm like, if everything else goes to shit, I'm good. I'm like, if my mum is alive and well, I was like, my daughter's alive and well. There's nobody in my inner circle that has been in a tragic accident. I have my health and my energy levels are fine. You know, I have a roof over my head and food in my mouth. I'm like, if I have these things, I'm like, if everything else goes to shit, I can handle it. You know, the difference between real problems and perceived problems. I'm like, somebody comes and tells me my daughter was in a car crash. I'm like, that's a real fucking problem. You know, there's a difference between, like, the way I distinguish real problems from perceived problems is like, you don't have a problem if there's something you can do to fix it. That's not a problem. That's a perceived problem. I was like, if something happens and you can do something to fix it, that is not a real problem. You know, every time I get trapped in something happens in my business, or, you know, my body fat climbs too high, I'm like, you don't have a problem here now, Brian. I was like, because you could fucking run and eat less. I'm like, you don't have a problem. You have a perceived problem. So either choose your suffering, either choose to be a little bit, have a body fat a little bit higher, or choose to go do the extra 5 kilometer run or do the extra 10 kilometer run. I'm like, choose your suffering. And when I was able to distinguish that, I do it for everything now. And health is the big one. Because when you have your health, and when I felt sick, and I was just curled over for 2 days, and thankfully I'm 100% now, I was curled over for 2 days, and I remember thinking, all I want to do is just not be sick. I was like, I don't care about, you know, training for a 100-mile run. I don't care about building my business. I don't care about a conference I have to go to. I don't care about any of this. I just don't want to be sick anymore. And checking in with that, because that gratitude anchor of every day you wake up and you feel that you have the energy levels and you feel that you've got health, you don't have cancer, nobody in your inner circle or the closest to you is on their deathbed or has been in a tragic accident. I'm like, you don't really have any real problems. You've got perceived problems. Yeah, like, shit happens. Life is difficult. You know, you've got work tasks you have to do. You got workouts that you got to do that you probably might not want to do. You got miles that you need to run because you're training for this thing. Like, all these things that you want to do that aren't ideal. But they're not problems, they're perceived problems. So ask yourself that question. Ask yourself, is there something I could do right now to fix this problem? Because if there is, you don't have a problem. You have an inconvenience. There's a difference. So when you have your health, you have many goals. When you're ill, you only have one. That's something I'm going to be constantly checking back in with as someone that's been very fortunate and hasn't been ill for the longest of time. But the Vietnamese water got me. I'm like, no, body's like, no, Brian, you're fucking done. You're going to be sick for a few days. So that's everything on today's podcast. Money doesn't equal happiness. You shouldn't need a holiday from life. You should be excited to see your friends. What will this pizza slice satisfy that the last one didn't? Life is short, focus on the valuable things. And when you have your health, you have many goals. And when you're ill, you only have one. So as always, this is a press record and talk episode. As you can tell, because I'm fleshing ideas out like live on the podcast, because these episodes go up largely unedited. So hopefully you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know. Please tag me on your Instagram stories. Take a screenshot of this episode and tag me on your Instagram stories, Brian_Keane_fitness. I hope you enjoyed, and I'll catch you all next week.